Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Bleeding on the Page. The piece you're about to hear is called Breaking Eggs. It's written and performed by Max Bardsley, with additional sound mix and sound design by Ollie McOlly. Take it away, Max.
Everything started on a sunny Sunday afternoon. I was in the shop buying some eggs, you see, and... Or maybe it was Monday. Or Tuesday. Or potentially even Wednesday, Thursday, Friday or Saturday, but it definitely wasn't Sunday because the shops closed on Sunday and I was in the shops buying some eggs. There was a heatwave on as well, so the shops were packed to the brim with people buying lemonade and other cooling supplies. It was a sea of sweaty, swollen, sweltering faces. I could barely orient myself, but I had the eggs in my hand, so that was good. For sure. I for sure had the eggs in my hand. But it doesn't really matter whether or not I had the eggs in my hand for sure, because that isn't everything that happened. I was with my friend Gideon as well. And we were nattering and chattering about everything that was happening, since it seems in recent days they had in fact discovered a pyramid in the far-off land of Serengetistan. But this pyramid was most unusual, because unlike the ones in Egypt, this one was underground and upside down. So me and Gideon were in what I would probably describe as a very heated debate over the logistics of what this pyramid meant in the face of everything else. Gideon was in the mindset that it wasn't actually a pyramid at all, but the calling card of great ancient architect Dombat Tosunu, Gideon believed that he'd left this edifice as a statement against the incarceration of the migrant people who were trying to move to Serengetistan at the time. I just believed that that was silly and that a pyramid is just a pyramid no matter what way you turn it. We were going back and forth about that for a very long time. I mean, we were talking about all sorts of subjects, not just that. It was all sorts of things. Politics, news, football, cinema, fruit, gum, wire, powder, onions, underwear, and what sort of car Gideon was going to buy after his promotion. Nissan. But before I could interject and recommend he go a more viable vehicular route, a huge burst of light came through the shop window. What could this be? We thought to ourselves at the exact same moment in the exact same way. So we ran outside to see what all the hubbub was about. And I mean, we weren't the only people there. Everyone was curious. There was at least 10,000 people there. Actually, probably more like 1,000. Actually, probably more like 500. Actually, probably more like 100. Actually, probably it was just me and Gideon. Actually, probably it was just me, since the shops closed on Sunday and I was buying some eggs. But I wasn't alone, because the huge burst of light was actually a lovely glowing lady with big golden wings. She had a glass eye and a very sexy style bra with very high boots. She held a megaphone in one hand and a lightning bolt in the other. So I stood in awe for maybe a minute or two, but didn't really say anything, didn't want to look like a fool, and she came down slowly. 2 hours later, she was still coming down slowly, and I was still in awe. 3 hours later, she was now walking up to me. The air was loud, like it was made of electricity. By the time she reached me, I'd almost passed out. Standing up straight for 3 hours was just about shout, but before I could collapse from exhaustion right there, she put the megaphone up to my ear and said really loud,
"You've dropped your eggs."
My ears were bleeding because of the sound, but despite that, I looked down at my feet and saw the yolk-covered ground. But what I didn't expect, what caught me by surprise, was that the floor was covered in baby chickens and they'd all died. "Did you do this?" I said, indignant and upset. But before I could finish, I felt something wet inside of my mouth and all along my teeth. It was this woman. She was kissing me as if she wanted to suck the life from my lungs. The kissing wouldn't stop. It became more passionate and strong. I kept on pushing and screaming, attempting to escape, but I couldn't break out of her muscly embrace. She enwrapped me and clasped me so I couldn't move and flew me up to the sky above the clouds. "This is abuse," I thought to myself in that heavenly space, but my thoughts could not become words since she had her tongue in my face. Eventually, we landed on a comet that was rushing past Earth. That's where she finally released me. Oh, God, thank God. She plopped me down on the Grey Moon Rock. It was here she informed me that her name was Stammered, that she'd flown a great length to see me, that I was to be her bride. It It seemed rather peculiar. I wasn't in any way spectacular. I was just an IT consultant for Bashfield & Co. I wasn't the wife of a large godlike entity. So I said no. Oh. That's when she got really upset. She grabbed me by the hair and threw me with the full force of a horse back to our own blue planet. As I was flying back down to Earth at the speed of light, I thought about Gideon and our little pyramid fight. I wonder how long it had been and whether he had gone home. Or maybe he'd waited and worried about me, his mate. Either way, it didn't matter at all. By the time I landed, I'd probably be dead. So I waited patiently for the concrete to hit my nose. But once I got to the moment of impact, it was not hard coldness that met my face, but soft yellow pillow cushion instead. It was the pile of dead baby chicken carcasses that had come out my eggs. They had cushioned my blow, made sure I wasn't dead. I looked up at the sky and bellowed with relief, but as I was doing so, something smashed all my teeth. It was Stamets' glass eye. It must have fallen as well. I was in absolute agony, but I didn't care. If swallowing a glass eye and losing my teeth is all that happens, then that's good with me. 3 weeks later, Gideon informed me that 4 weeks later, Stamets had had her organs harvested by the state, which, despite sexually abusing me and throwing me by my hair and smashing my teeth and then destroying my ears, I felt was a little harsh. I mean, who wants to have their organs harvested? After I found out about that, I went to the shops to buy some eggs, because obviously last time they'd been lost. But none of that really matters, because that isn't by any means everything that happened. So I set out on a sunny Sunday afternoon to buy some eggs. And that's when everything happened.
Max Barsley, live in the studio with Breaking Eggs. How are you feeling, Max? You're very sweaty. You look more like an alcoholic than last week.
And I'm only like one third way through my in-podcast beer.
In-podcast beer.
You know, you let yourself have one beer, loosen up a bit.
Max is here. Quick, get him a beer. Get him a beer. It's going to be really wild.
Otherwise,
wired.
He'll shake through the whole thing.
We can't have you shaking about during this podcast.
That's a great idea, Sam.
We have got a great episode lined up. It's going to be truly fantastic. So we're going to be talking about Breaking Bad, and we're going to be doing a new item where we're talking about an unknown film to a sequel to a classic film. And we have, firstly, we're going to make an announcement. That's our short film, Bangers and Mash.
Bangers and Mash!
Yeah. Which you might have seen, it's on Dick Pics. It's about a guy, he's eating a bunch of mash and sausages, and he isn't the one humiliated. That has been selected to be shown at Chort's Comedy Fest at the Angel Comedy Club on the 3rd of November. So if you are interested...
And in London.
And in North London, and you want to come down for 2 hours and meet us and also see the film on the big screen, you can come along. We'd really appreciate you guys coming if you fancied it. So we have links to the ticket in the podcast description.
Yeah. It would be great to see some faces, me and Sam, and a bunch of people who are working on the
nervous
film.
Nervous wrecks. Yeah, because 352-minute comedy shorts were submitted, and we're in the top 10.
So we must be good in some to someone's criteria somewhere.
Absolutely. We've made it into the final.
Yeah. So yeah, what did you think of the monologue thing?
Oh yeah, that thing. Yeah. Breaking Eggs. Yeah, it's really good, man. Yeah. I think you should talk a bit about it.
Yeah, because basically, like, this is an offshoot from something I was doing at university. What I like about my course is, like, our tutors and stuff just tell us to go and make things and then come back and showcase them. I was like, I'm going to write something. I'm a writer.
And, like, come and perform a monologue.
Because I was really looking into... I do like hip-hop stuff. I like rhythmic. I like things to rhythm. I love that Birdman scene where they're speaking, and I just love the idea of doing, like, a monologue.
So you like Birdman, you like hip hop, so you thought, gonna write myself a little rhythmic monologue that fits with the drum beat.
Yeah, it was really annoying because my girlfriend was with me the other day, and I keep on getting annoyed by people telling me I've written a rap. Because my girlfriend was like lying in bed with me the other day, and I was like, "What do you think of that? Did you like it?" She was like, oh yeah, it was like great. You should have seen yourself. You just went off, you wrote. Everyone's like, oh my God, what's going on? And then you like, everyone was like waiting and waiting. It's like right till the end of lesson, you were still going. You came back with these papers like, oh my God, Max has written something. And then you got up on stage and there was like a spotlight on you. And then this beat came. And then you just gave off like one of the best raps I've ever seen. And I was like, it's not a rap. I didn't do rap.
It's got rap elements.
It's definitely got rap elements.
It's more of a poem, I think.
Yeah. I was just looking at evocative language, sort of subtle references to like modern day culture.
You wanted it to be deliberately sort of confusing and non-linear, right?
Yeah, because I've been
you bloody achieved it, mate.
Yeah, one of the things was there's a song called The Last Time I Did Acid I Went Insane by Jeffrey Lewis.
Jesse Pinkman.
But he's great.
Jeffrey Lewis.
Yeah. Which if you haven't listened to tune, it's a tune, yeah. It's a tune, but that was a huge source of inspiration as well, because it is just him on his guitar describing a time that he took acid. So it takes on that really like non-linear, confusing way that like things can turn into themselves. I just decided to not have a reason for that happening and just do it anyway, just because like there's a playwright called Ian Esco who is a big inspiration here as well.
Oh. What's going on about your old playwrights?
Your theatre. Yeah.
No, I really like it. I really like a lot of gags in there, especially when you're waiting for 2 hours for the woman to go. And the descriptions are very funny. It's a really great piece. And I think
juxtaposing ingredients, like she has a bad eye and she's like got a lightning, like aggressive with beautiful, abuse with like
abuse,
you know,
in a heavenly vibe.
You
know,
chicken carcasses are actually the thing that save him from dying. So it's like a death or is actually the salvation. So that's why
eggs come in handy.
Yeah, that's what I found like fun to play with.
We got here in the studio, and our producer Jack wasn't here.
Yeah, he was late. He was off getting vegan lunch.
He was off getting vegan toasties.
Instead of coming into work,
leaving us waiting around,
sitting about,
and this isn't the first time it's happened.
It's the second time.
He's done it before.
We're calling you out on the podcast, mate. You're in trouble now.
And and Max did a little performance to some of Jack's colleagues who were nice enough to
act like they enjoyed it,
genuinely did. It's really good. Why are you
No, I'm not insecure. I'm just insecure about everything.
Anyway, I think we should move on to the competition.
Yes.
We are going to do a competition. That's right. You can win a Genie and the Boy t-shirt.
Which is very fashionable. You know, when we go out wearing them, we get lots of compliments. I like your jumper.
It happened today because you're
wearing
one
just today.
Yeah.
As I was coming out, I was wearing a Genie and the Boy jumper. And someone said to me, oh, I like your jumper. I went, thanks, I made it. Which is a good feeling. You can't say that if you win it.
Yeah.
But you could say I won it.
So these Genie and the Boy t-shirts are handmade by me and Manuel. they're not handmade by us, but you know what we mean.
We did make them from scratch. It's not like they're mass produced.
No, they're
quite limited, actually.
Yeah,
so.
They're all in our house at the moment.
They are all in our house in a wardrobe, like hanging up.
So we're scratching our heads on like what to do for a competition because we want to get you guys out the woodwork.
Yeah, come on, man.
You've all been quiet.
We see all your listens, but
yeah, we know you're there, but you're lurking. So what we want you guys to do is to email us a haiku.
Or tweet it at us, or comment on a YouTube video,
or Instagram. Anyway, we will see.
We'll see it wherever you contact us.
But the best way is to email at inquiries@nitpicks.co.uk. Leave a haiku, and then also say why you want the t-shirt.
Yeah, and the haiku can be about anything you want. But the one we enjoy the most will win a t-shirt, and we promise to be unbiased, loyal, good judges,
and
we will have...
We'll read them out on the show.
We will.
And, postage will be included, everything will be included.
We've got you covered on every base.
And it'll be international as well. So.
And we'll read out our collection of the haikus on the podcast, and shall we say, like, in 2 weeks' time, because we're going to have someone else on next week and then the week after.
Yeah, all right. Well, so 2 weeks from now we're announce it, but we'll read some out next week if we get any.
Yeah,
but we won't make a decision.
No.
Okay. So as well, what's going on with what we're writing? We wanted a dinosaur expert. We haven't got one yet.
If anyone knows any dinosaur illustrators, or dino experts,
dino spurts,
send them to us. You know, send them our way. We'll get them on.
I think we should write a full drama about this dinosaur idea. I think it's got legs. You know, actually.
Yeah.
Because that jester idea. We've spent a while talking about this, and then you've gone off and you've started making a jester piece at uni.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, there's a jester in it.
Yeah, there is a jester in it.
And a king.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. Yeah. But there's also a slave. And it's all set in Greek times. We weren't thinking of doing that.
Well, we can't write a jester king.
They'd be totally different in flavour.
King drama on this podcast. Look, one-off at uni.
I think you're too sensitive about it all. You know, ideas are fluid. You know,
no.
Like you said, you think Spider-Man should be out for the public. I feel like jesters are out for the public as well.
They are out for the public. It's fine.
You don't copyright jesters.
I didn't. It's fine. It's just I don't think you should be working on two jester pieces at the same time. I'm trying to help you out.
Maybe I wanted to.
Are you going to come back from uni one day and say, oh yeah, we've got a piece about this dinosaur illustrator? And I'll be like, oh, fuck.
Well,
I
was meaning to tell you, actually, that during uni today, for my directing module, I'm going to be doing a dinosaur illustrator.
Shit. I think we should do this dinosaur idea. Mm. I think first scene should be a monologue, his perception, you know, a little bit like, hi. I'm Johnny Drawer.
Do you know what? Yes, I agree.
And second scene should be more of a different kind.
Maybe it's him like on a date with a woman, talking about is dinosaur illustrations.
Well, maybe that's how it should open. I quite like that. That's good. That's a strong opening, actually.
Oh, thank you.
It's way better than what
I just threw that out there as well. Well, a monologue could also... I quite like it starting with a monologue to lay out the character, because then if you go into the scene of him on a date with a woman, you can make it more about the... You don't need to say as much in it, so you can actually have it more subtle if you wanted to.
And then the second act's got to happen. So... at some point, they either find a dinosaur, which is really similar to his drawing, or something else is going to happen. And the fact that he's a dinosaur illustrator is just a character thing, and it's not actually part of the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like that as well. Because I quite like the idea of, the woman being disgusted. Like, the dinosaurs are a metaphor.
Yeah. The dinosaurs are a metaphor for something clever and witty.
You know, maybe the dinosaurs are a metaphor for his past, that he's denying himself and contorting in a different way as well.
Ooh, yeah.
You know,
like
it's quite a good, it's quite evocative, the idea of dinosaur drawings being, you know, inaccurate to the truth.
So he's got repressed memories.
Yes, yeah.
He's got repressed memories.
It could be good. Maybe he's meeting with an ex and he's got repressed memories about what he's done with her.
Ooh.
It could be something deep like
that. That doesn't sound very funny.
Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be funny.
We don't have to do comedies on here.
We can do legit shit, Sam. You know, don't put yourself in a bubble. Don't put yourself in a box.
All right. Well, let's think about that and then update the listeners next week.
Yeah. We are open to ideas and suggestions.
Yeah. We're open scripts. To lots of things, actually.
We're almost open to anything. You know, we're sexually fluid as well, so...
Absolutely. Gender fluid, sexually fluid.
We'll go whichever
we're
way you want.
We're just basically liquid.
I'm a puddle. I'm a puddle. German puddle.
I've got a new item. It's called...
Sam looked really insecure when he looked at me then. I've got a new item.
Yeah, it's called... I didn't know that existed! we talk about obscure films, which gives the response every time someone goes, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
We just told some people at Studio 71, I did, while you were in the toilet, and they were all like, oh, I didn't know it existed.
There you go. That's it. That's the response.
There is a sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show, written
which
by
also,
the same bloke.
You might want to explain what Rocky Horror Picture Show is, because some people might not know.
I think most people know what Time Warp.
You say that you didn't.
I knew what it was.
Yeah, but you didn't.
I hadn't seen it, but I knew what it was.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, so there's a sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's written by the same person and directed by the same person, and it has a lot of the same cast members, including Rick Mayall.
Yeah, from the likes of Bottom.
From the likes of Bottom and Young Ones.
Which, if you haven't seen Bottom or Young Ones, these are all pivotal British TV shows, which have defined me and Sam.
Yes, we've spoken about Bottom when we were talking about that when we did.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Rick Mayall's a hero. Shock Treatment, it's called, and it came out in 1981. So, let's go back, though. What the hell is Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Rocky Horror.
How would you describe it?
Rocky Horror Picture Show is like a camp, like self-aware musical, which kind of has this like parodical, like clown-like performance style, where this man and woman who are like your conventional like 40s couple, almost like, "Hi, honey, how are you?" Like that.
Yeah,
they've got they're sort of that young couple. They look like they could have come off the set of the John Travolta movie where he's wearing a leather jacket and shit.
Grease.
Yeah, they look like they could came off. They're the nerds that came off the set of Grease, and their car breaks down and they come off to this like haunted horror mansion.
It's a real standard trope, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's what's fun about it, is it bathes in these kind of like tropes. It's really on the nose
it's
about
all
them.
A musical as well, but yeah. Dan, our housemate, Rocky Horror Picture Show is his favourite film, and I watched it with him this week, and he was coming out with all these facts, because it opens with these lips for like 4 minutes. It's just lips, and he was saying like, oh yeah, they're singing about this B movie that came out, and they wanted to use footage from that, but they couldn't use it, they didn't get the rights to it. So that's why they're just using lips. So we were like, let's get Dan on as an expert in Rocky
sick.
Horror, but he's throwing up all morning.
He's got the gunk. He's stuck with the gunk.
Yeah, so it's a musical, but Dan described it as a rock opera.
Yes.
And I think
definitely.
That's quite accurate.
That's very correct. And so they come into this house and they want to find a place to rest and stuff, and they're met by a lovely transvestite from Transsexual Transylvania.
Yes.
Tim played
Curry.
By Tim Curry, but what's the actual name of
Frankenfurter?
That's right. And she sings one of the most, or the transvestite Tim Curry sings one of the most iconic rock opera songs. I'm just a sweet transvestite from Transsexual Transylvania.
That was really good.
Thank you, thank you.
Coming in.
Someone's got some singing chops.
You can rap, you can sing. What can't you do, Max?
And they've sort of walked into the middle of like a sexual, not sexual, scientific
sexual.
Showcasing, though, of,
it's like a Frankenstein thing. Yeah. They're bringing back this guy to life called Rocky.
But instead of an ugly monster,
Tim Curry,
he's like a sexy
Tim
blonde beefcake.
Tim Curry's playing a transvestite, and this couple, Brad and Janet, who are in this castle, who are like,
our car broke down. We're just looking for a phone.
He's like, welcome. And then they like stay there, and Tim Curry comes in, pretends to be, he pretends to be Brad, and he goes into Janet's bed, and she's like, no, stop it. And then she fucks him, and then Brad's in bed, and then Tim Curry comes in dressed as Janet and fucks Brad.
Everyone gets really sexual, and then Janet later on fucks other people.
She fucks Rocky.
Everyone's fucking people. It's this insane environment.
Rocky's this like hunky blonde-haired guy who's like a child because he's just been brought to life through bits and pieces of different bodies, and he's going around not knowing what's going on, and Janet kind of has a thing with him. But Dan told me that the guy was Swedish and he didn't speak any English, and they dubbed over everything he did, his singing and his
voice.
That's
so funny.
the songs are amazing.
Rocky Horror Picture Show is actually a pivotal film. I think it's an important film, both in terms of what it does for society, in terms of breaking down barriers, in terms of sexuality and, you know, cross-dressing, stuff like that. It's very, very comfortable with that. Yeah. And for the time it was made, I think it's very progressive.
It was very controversial when it came out. People were upset.
But also, it is a fantastically made film. The sets are really characteristic. They've got so much personality to them.
I think they filmed it in an actual creepy castle.
It does seem like that. They've got Meatloaf in it, who sings one of the best songs ever as well.
Tim Curry is amazing,
and Tim Curry's incredible, and it's probably Tim Curry's best performance, I would go as far to say, in a way.
Who else is he?
He does a lot of good shots.
Is he in Lion King?
The Clown? No, he's not. He might be. I don't think so though. But he's done a lot
acting.
Of bits, but like Rocky Horror is like really, he's just great.
Yeah.
So it's like that's existed on its own for ages, and I've liked it for a long time. Sam watched it recently, and I didn't even know that we found out that there is like this spiritual
sequel. No, it's an actual sequel.
No, but we read that it wasn't.
It's not an official sequel.
Exactly. So it's like
but
a spiritual.
But it's got the same. It's got Brad and Janet in it. Mm. It's the same writer and it's the same director. I mean, and they made it because Rocky Horror Picture Show was so popular in this midnight screening kind of thing. So they said, oh, let's let's make another one. So it was, and the guy wrote the musical for the film. So it was, I think it was very much, and all the earlier drafts of the script were to do with it being a sequel,
yeah,
and like all this other stuff. So I think even though they say it's an unofficial sequel, I think it's an official one.
So what were your thoughts on Shock Treatment, and what is it about?
All right, well, what's it about? Okay, it's like a giant game show. I don't want to talk about it too long because, to be honest, like, it's not really that special. It's just more like of a surprise that it
exists. I disagree. I think if you like Rocky Horror Picture Show, I think you'll enjoy this quite a lot.
Yeah, I think
to be honest.
I think you will enjoy it, but I don't know. I think it will also be... It's going to always be in the shadow of Rocky Horror because it's not as good as Rocky Horror. No. So I mean,
Rocky
Dan,
Horror is very much a flash in the pan.
Dan
isn't
is
it?
Like the biggest Rocky Horror fan I know, and he was pretty disappointed by it.
Yeah, but Dan is also a cynical man who
He's
gets
cynical,
easily disappointed by
snooty
anything.
Snooty Swiss man.
I'm sad to say, you know, he's amazing though, but he is a snooty Swiss man.
Okay, so it basically is just Brad and Janet go on this game show. But all of it is like a town called Denton, which they live in. And
which is also a game show.
Which I think the whole town is on TV
show, yeah,
all the time, which they did for budgetary reasons because they could only film in that TV studio. That was the only place they could shoot the film.
Oh, really?
So they changed the script to make everything be part of a TV show. So the hospital. So they take Brad to a mental hospital because he's too boring in the opening, which is really funny. And then the hospital is all a TV show.
Yeah,
as well. And then Janet goes home and sees her parents, and then that's a TV show, and they're constantly doing adverts for coffee machines and stuff, and I quite like that element,
yeah,
even though they have put that in for budgetary reasons.
Yeah.
I actually really liked it,
and there's some good songs as well. The one where Brad's getting sent to the insane asylum and they're like talking to appliances and confessing their inner insecurities to kitchen appliances is as a song is really funny.
It's like bitching in the kitchen and crying in the bedroom all night.
Yeah. Bitching in the kitchen and crying in the bedroom all night. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, so I like that. And it does have some
just
moments.
Doing little songs to shower curtains and toasters.
And it's all hosted by this really weird blind man who's pretending to be blind. Who's sort of a bit of a reference to like slightly Hitler, like he looks a bit Hitlery.
yeah.
And he's got this like weird German accent and goes around being really handsy with like Janet.
Yeah.
And they basically take Janet away and they start building her up to be the next big superstar of this town. And she starts moving further and further away from her husband, who's just kept in a cage and completely medicated the whole time.
Yeah. I think
so I think that's kind of weird and kooky and very dark.
With the first Rocky Horror, there's so many characters that are quite likable.
Mm.
Like Frank, Tim Curry's character is really likable.
The characters are evil but likable.
He's so camp and funny that you like him. And Brad and Janet are just like really overly naive, which is why they keep fucking different people and they keep on like being confused about what's happening. And Rocky as well is like a victim. So essentially there's all these characters that you kind of feel for and you really like despite the overacting. Whereas Shock Treatment, the only character I really cared about or rooted for was Rick Mayall's character. Purely because he was played by Rick Mayall.
And he doesn't even have
and
any
lines.
He has one line.
And it's his first ever gig. So at first I was like, how could they do this to Rick Mayall? Just put him in a corner.
Sam was very indignant. Yeah.
But then I looked up and I was like, all right, fair enough.
They gave him a shot.
They flew him all the way. Well, actually, it was filmed in London, so they didn't fly
so
anyway.
Shut the fuck up, you idiot.
We're going to fly you all the way to down the road, Rick Mayall.
That's what we felt like when we got the Studio 71 podcast gig.
Yeah.
They were like, congrats. Just like, get two,
we're like,
2 minutes.
Whoa, we're packed for LA, man.
No, it's just down the road.
And it's a shed
in Jack's back garden. It's okay, he keeps giving us booze, so it's fine.
So I think basically go in to it. If you're a fan of Rocky Horror Picture Show, there's like a couple good songs, there's like four, I'd say.
Maybe even three.
Yeah. Because it's the utensil one. I like the one Janet's dad does a song about being a man,
which
and
is
what
very
being a man is,
very
which I really
good.
Liked.
Yeah, that is funny. It is funny. And then after also,
and
I
then
think
the title
is...
track "Shock Treatment" is quite good.
Oh yeah, "Shock Treatment" is good. And yeah, because like
The sets are amazing.
The sets are great. Again, it does have a lot of the features that the original Rocky has, but it's like its pacing isn't quite as strong.
No.
And his characters aren't as strong. They replaced the actors that played Janet and the main guy.
Brad,
and the story, Brad, and the story actually centers around them more as well. You spend more time with them as characters. They're not quite as charismatic. They're not doing I do agree, they're not doing the same level of performance. Whereas everyone in Rocky Horror Picture Show is overacting to the perfect degree.
Yeah.
In this one, Janet and Brad are a little bit more dialed back. It's a little bit more of a grounded story for them in a way.
Yeah.
Because they actually go through sort of solid arcs. Whereas Rocky Horror is more of a happening. It's more of an event. No one really
Because the ending is aliens come in and it's really weird. And you're just fuck it. Yeah, fine. Whereas this one, they're like, oh no, you were my secret twin all along.
Yeah, and that's
and
not
just
quite
a little
as
bit, melodramatic.
It doesn't feel as self-aware.
Yeah, no. But there is one amazing part of Shock Treatment which I just really loved, which is everyone goes to bed at the same time. They're all in the studio. The audience goes to sleep.
Yeah.
Everyone's sleeping. And then suddenly there's this big burst of light. And there's suddenly this big burst of light. And they're all like, what? What? And then there's just a weird man who's just turned the lights on and he's holding a dead bird. He's just waving this dead bird. And he goes, is this dead bird yours?
Yeah.
And then she goes, ah! And then it just changes. And that's the whole, that is just the end of a scene.
It's not that I wouldn't not recommend it to people. I would say it's worth watching.
If you're a fan of Brazil,
and if you're a fan of Rocky Horror,
I think it's Brazil meets Rocky Horror. It's very 80s,
super 80s,
really 80s. Super.
It does. It actually feels like it's got slightly similar set design to 80s Doctor Who.
Yeah,
a little bit.
It's just you won't really feel things while watching it. You'll feel a bit numb. That's what I felt. I felt a bit numb.
I felt entertained.
Yeah, but I think
you just feel numb because you're back on your meds. So it's just getting back to you.
Don't talk about that on here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I not? Do you not want people to know?
I don't want them to know. Anyway, let's move on. Our next item is what's in the cinema. But this one isn't even in the cinema.
It's on Netflix.
It's a Netflix event is how they advertise.
They love doing that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they do the Netflix event.
Do you think they'll ever release a film and just go, it's a new Netflix film, as opposed to calling it an event?
It's a new Netflix film.
Hi guys, we got a new film on Netflix for you to watch. They sort of did that with the Oscar, the one that got nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
they sort of said that was just a film.
This is quite a weird one because it's a movie. It's a Breaking Bad movie.
Yeah.
And
Camino.
Five
El
seasons.
Camino or Camino?
It's El Camino.
El Camino.
El Camino, starring Aaron Paul.
Bringing six seasons to a close. Fat Aaron Paul and Fat Damon. Damon.
Yeah.
It's not even Matt Damon.
So this is directed by Vince Gilligan, who made Breaking Bad. So it's written and directed by Vince Gilligan. And he's written two films before. That I found them online yesterday, and the synopsis really made me laugh, so I thought I'd read them to you. So this is the 1993 film Wilder Napalm.
Wilder Napalm?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is his first film that he wrote. It's his first actual writing credit.
When was this made?
1993.
Okay.
Two brothers.
The best year.
Two brothers with the secret power of starting fires with their minds reunite after years apart, only to find conflict with their differing lifestyles.
So, is this just is this kind of that film with Ryan Reynolds and that guy from that Arrested Development, where it's I've got a fancy life and you've got a boring life, let's switch brains.
But we can both start fires with our minds.
But instead they can also start fires
it's
with their minds.
Pyrokinesis.
Yeah, pyrokinesis is a common thing in mythology, which is weird as hell anyway.
Isn't there a Stephen King film where someone can start fires?
There might be.
I think there
Stephen King is whack. There's Carrie, she does start a fire with her mind, but she can't do it directly.
And that had Dennis Quaid in.
So what do you think their differences are?
I don't know. They can start fires with one's
evil, one's good.
One of them works in accounting. The other one is a motocross bike driver. However will they get on?
Steve, can you do the accounts by Monday, please?
No, man. I just like riding my motorbike.
gonna set you on fire with my mind.
I set my motorbike on fire. Wow.
And then, so then he doesn't make another. He doesn't write another film for 5 years.
It's probably for the best. That pitch sounded awful.
In that 5 year time, he's probably taken a bit of meth.
Probably gone. I reckon he's gone to the desert and done some acid to inspire him.
Yeah. Well, that's what. Yeah. Because this one's called Home Fries.
Yeah.
Pregnant Sally unknowingly falls for the stepson of the deceased father of her baby and has to deal with his homicidal family.
Mm, that kind of sounds interesting.
Pregnant Sally unknowingly falls for the stepson of the deceased father of her baby and has to deal with his homicidal family.
What the fuck? Hang on, what? What?
And apparently it's very... apparently everyone
is it very
thought,
incesty?
Well, I don't know, because I haven't seen it. But everyone thought that it was going to be like a white, like American, like kind of lowbrow comedy film. But actually it's quite like avant-garde and like weird. And that like it hasn't it never found its audience, according to one review.
But well, it has now. It has now. Two boys sitting across from each other. That's
these.
His audience.
We'll watch these for next week. You should. Yeah. You guys should watch these too, if you can find them.
Watch along
then,
with us.
And then he doesn't write another film for 10 years. Mm. And the next film he makes is Hancock. He wrote Hancock. Vince Gilligan wrote Hancock with Will Smith.
Oh!
It all makes sense.
My favourite superhero movie. He made it. He made it.
I'm an alcoholic because I can't deal with being super.
It's tough being a Superman. I got the drugs. Oh, fuck you. Fuck you.
I'm fine.
I don't give a shit. I'm Will Smith. I'm basically a Scientologist.
I ain't wearing time. Fuck off.
I'm a leather clad hero.
Yeah. Okay.
Well Hancock. Yeah. Hancock is trash. Yeah. Vince Gilligan's had a bit of a trash career up until Breaking Bad.
Yeah, no. Well, and then, yeah, Breaking Bad. We all love Breaking Bad. It's the best show ever made.
Just to preface this, I watched El Camino without having seen all of Breaking Bad. Yeah. I dipped out of Breaking Bad at around season 4. I think you could still follow it, right? I could follow it fine.
But you did have me explaining.
You were just there nattering
but,
next
like,
to
I
me.
I didn't really give you any information that was that important.
No. I found it cool though. It was
story of my life.
I realized I zoned out of Breaking Bad because I didn't really correlate how bad killing people was. Like, you know how it's got to be a descent.
Every time they kill someone in Breaking Bad, they're always like, I can't believe I've done this. It's so bad.
Yeah, and I think at that time I was like, shut up. People kill people all the time in movies.
So stop being a pussy.
You know, when I was 16 or whatever. Yeah. Or maybe it's because he's going to die. So I'm like, yeah, he can kill people.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It just didn't impact me that well.
So let's go through El Camino. Overall thoughts of El Camino.
You know, I think it was...
Without going into too many details.
Yeah, so spoiler-free talk of El Camino. I think it was okay. Like, it was fine.
Yeah.
It kind of happens. It just takes you through it. It's like, it doesn't really have a clear through line about what it wants to be about necessarily or either, you know, it's like...
Did it feel like a film?
No, it felt like a long episode of Breaking Bad.
That's what it is, I would say. Yeah. It's just a long episode of Breaking Bad that we didn't really need.
Yeah.
But it's not unwelcomed.
Because there's some very good scenes in there. There's some really good scenes that play out. And it is just like Jesse Pinkman trying to do something, little things getting in his way and him trying to resolve
those
as
it goes on. We've subtitled this El Camino, Jesse's Journey to Alaska.
Yeah.
Because that's all it is. Jesse just goes to Alaska. That's Jesse's journey to Alaska.
And you get told that from the get-go. Yeah. So, yeah.
So let's go. The first scene is with Jesse.
Are we going into spoilers now?
Yeah, we're going to go into spoilers.
So check it out if you like Breaking Bad. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's good. Fine. It's good.
And if you haven't seen Breaking Bad, just watch Breaking Bad.
And we're going to dissect why it's sort of middle of the road.
We're
going to
go through El Camino scene by scene in our new item.
Scene by scene.
Frame by frame. So yeah, the first scene is Jesse and Mike are like by the water.
Yeah.
Which is where Mike died.
Yeah.
Spoilers. And Mike says to Jesse, you got a lot of money, kid. And he's like, what would you do, Mike? If you were my age and you had all this money, what would you do? And Mike goes, I'd go to Alaska. And then
Jesse like looks at him like, hey, that seems like a good idea.
And that sets him up on his journey to Alaska.
To Alaska.
Yeah.
Which he never spoke about. So does he ever speak about that in the Breaking Bad series where like no. Walter White's like, what would you do? He's like, probably go to Alaska. Like, did he ever have that?
No.
So it's just shoved in. No. Jack, could you not cough during the podcast, by the way?
Because like, you've got a mic now.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it's turned off, but that is a huge cough. So.
Coming in late and coughing, interrupting our train of thought.
Get a strep seal down, yo, or gal.
not got a dino spurt waiting for us in the studio. It's been disappointment after disappointment.
Anyway, where were we?
Jack,
we really like you, actually. Yeah,
he's doing a great job.
And it's okay. Everyone's got the gunk nowadays.
Yeah, everyone's ill. Everyone's dying. Brexit's happening. We're all going to die.
There's two protests happening on Saturday.
Yeah, there's two happening tomorrow on Saturday. Yeah. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so, Mike, I think they just wanted to chuck in a scene with Mike, but also give him that motivation. Then it goes into present day. What happened after the end of Breaking Bad? Jesse's driving in the car and he's screaming, he's covered in cuts, and he's also put on quite a lot of weight. Aaron Paul is I don't get why they didn't get the guy a trainer, because it's like quite noticeable that the guy now has a double chin. When he's just been, he's both.
You sort of noticed that from the first scene.
Yeah, exactly. You really? Sort of always noticed that, but you could have established in that scene with Mike that he could be a bit porky. That's all right. I don't mind that. But Jesse's just been held prisoner by a group of Nazis. He's been put underground.
And he looks like he's just come out of White Castle.
He does.
Just had a couple burgers.
I know, it doesn't make
sense. He left his Nazi prison cage.
And he's spending the whole movie being like, I was tortured, man. It was fucked up. But he's considerably larger.
Covered in scars and stuff. But he looks like they fed him well.
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
And his Nazi torturer seems well fed as well.
Yeah. We'll get on to Fat Damon. We'll get on to him. Yeah, so then he goes around Skinny Pete's and Badger's house.
Their opening scene is kind of nice, but it is also just that scene from 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yeah, it's exactly that scene. It's
where they're playing games and going, you're this.
Yeah, well, you like driving Miss Daisy. Well, you're so slow, you drive like my grandma. Oh,
except it's not quite as funny, and you've just seen Jesse Pinkman like cry in his car and scream.
Yeah, and his Badger and Skinny Pink. Skinny Pete up to their old antics. Yeah. Jesse turns up at the
door. They are likable, though.
They are nice guys. Yeah. I like them. I'd be mates with them.
I would as well.
We need Skinny Pete in our life.
I thought I was your Skinny Pete man.
Yeah, well...
Unbelievable. I thought we were like the Skinny Pete and the
Badger.
Other guy.
Yeah,
you're Badger. Yeah.
Anyway, so Jesse turns up at the door, and he...
Not
Jesse,
really skinny.
They don't recognize him at first.
And then probably because he's so fat.
He comes in, eats a bunch of noodles, and crashes out on the bed.
Yeah.
While Skinny Pete and Badger just potter around. Watch a bit of the
news. They just
watch
a bit of the news.
Yeah. Jesse wakes up in the morning.
Catch up with the politics, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Checks up on their Conan O'Brien.
Go like, watch some Conan O'Brien, some late night with Stephen Colbert.
Jesse wakes up and he's forgotten where he is. He still thinks he's held prisoner, so he starts screaming and like trying to get out of that room. Skinny Pete and Badger
shoots them.
Come in. He pulls a gun on them. They're like, whoa, whoa, man, chill out, man, chill. And then
he does.
He chills out. Then he has a shower. You can see all the dirt coming off his back.
Remembers getting washed with a hose horribly.
Yeah, he remembers all his Nazi prisoner torture. And then he decides that he's got to get rid of his car because
the government's tracking
him. The government's gonna get him if they see the car. So he phones up an old scrap dealer.
We never quite figured out why the government or how the government are tracking the car.
Yeah, because the scrap dealer comes over and he checks the car and it's got, and he says like, oh, I've got to get out of here, the feds are coming. I'm like, how's it?
And he's like, the thing's been activated.
The thing. The thing in the back.
The thing. The government's activated it. Run!
So Skinny Pete immediately comes up with like quite a genius plan, which I was quite confused at how this like weird.
Does he never
crackhead.
Come up with clever plans before?
No, he's never come up with a clever plan before. Aaron Paul or Jesse Pinkman has before.
Those boys just set Jesse up like fully.
They give him a bunch of money and they all swap cars and all disappear. And it's here that we get the first proper flashback, which is back to where Jesse is in his hole. And who gives him a visit? None other than Fat Damon. So this guy, he used to be cool. Everyone used to say, laugh about how this guy looked like Matt Damon, and he was in Black Mirror.
Yeah. And blonde.
And he was in blonde. Breaking Bad. He's like blonde Matt Damon. But he's put on so much weight.
He's put on some kilos.
He is overweight at this point. He's not even like chubby. He's like actually like.
And it doesn't even matter.
And that's fine. That's
you know,
fine.
They look good. Yeah, the they guy, look, you know, he wears the weight well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's got a good dad bod going for him, and I respect it.
There's like, nothing wrong
I've got nothing against it as an aesthetic. Yeah. Like, hear us out.
Except.
You know, and Aaron Paul pulls off the double chin as well. Not, we both have them.
Yeah.
We're both a little porky. Like, that's cool with
that's
us.
Fine.
Like, you know, it's fashion. Girls like him.
Except
like him like that.
When you're
right,
doing...
Jack?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
but
got
But when
it.
You're doing a flashback to the, an event that happened
in
before.
A show where we could see them when they were skinny, like we know
because Fat Damon was killed by Jesse at the end of the last episode and he was Finn,
and that's why El Camino shit. Because you know it, no but no here there, it does provide a problem because it does provide a mild problem because it does take you out of it.
I know,
like, you know, this is a drama, you're trying to get sucked into the emotional core of what each scene is trying to be about, and you know every time we got into do a flashback or something, we're just like, they're so fat, like why didn't they just get a trainer in so they look like they did in the flashback?
60 grand would have probably paid for a personal trainer for both of them.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea how much
a
personal trainer
costs. I'm just saying roughly.
Probably be less than 60 grand.
It's Matt from Always Sunny.
Yeah, he beefed the fuck up for Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That's it. He beefed up. He put on weight.
Like
he's done all sorts of things with his body for like a sitcom that like barely wins any awards, even though it deserves them.
Breaking Bad is like culturally important and people claim it's like the best show ever. So why have they just allowed this to happen? Huh? Anyway, but the scene with Fat Damon and Jesse is really nice, actually. It really passes him
so
down the cigarette.
The flashback sequences are some of like the better bits. A bit hit and miss, really. Like, there's some of the later ones maybe don't vibe with me as much.
But this particular scene
I really like because
of the way that... I don't know the name of the character. Todd, I think he's called. I like the way that Todd is framed underneath, behind these bars. And it really, we see it from the perspective of Jesse.
You get to see the status.
Yeah.
The interplay of status... That scene itself, that flashback with him and the with Fat Damon doing their thing, because they go, he runs constantly, doesn't it? It doesn't cut back. They just go, he gets him out and stuff like that.
I really like the light they're using this whole thing, and then he drives him around.
Because it's a great interplay of status. The whole scene is just like a super great shift, constant shifting in status, which just makes it really gripping. So it's well written as hell.
Todd's character is kind of like this weird, like kind of sociopath, psychopath kind of character.
Yeah, who takes a keen liking as well. He likes
Jesse
as well.
At first, me and Max both thought that he was gonna diddle with Jesse.
Yeah, we thought he was gonna take Jesse to a house and fuck him.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
Thank God.
So by the time he takes Jesse to go and bury a body.
Yeah.
By the time we got there, we're like, oh, it's just a dead body. It's not even a big deal.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter. People kill people all the time.
He's not diddling Jesse.
Yeah, yeah. He takes Jesse to his apartment.
Yeah.
And he shows him the dead body of his cleaning lady, who he has choked to death. And Todd is just completely unemotional about it. And it's a really funny scene. I mean, I love it.
And he's like cooking Jesse's soup.
Yeah. Well, there's this dead body on the floor. And and Jesse's just like, why did you kill her? And it's because she found where he stashed his money.
Which is a bit of a weak motivation to kill her in a way.
It's essentially just Todd has gone, Jesse, I'm going to get you out your hole. And I'm going to drive you to my house. And I'm going to show you that I've got loads and loads of money.
That's like the ultimate
purpose
of the scene.
It might come in handy for later.
If you ever break out of here and I die, that might be useful for you to know.
Yeah, Todd is sitting there eating soup and he basically goes to Jesse, oh, I've got to find a new hiding place for my money. I've got an idea, though, and no one will ever find it. Flash forward, Jesse is in Todd's room, stripping up all the walls. He's looking for this secret stash of money. And this is a really good sequence where you see Jesse, like, frantically searching for this cash. And we are just as curious and desperate as Jesse to know where he's hidden it. Because, you know, as audience members, we like a good mystery.
I wouldn't assume everyone was like that.
I was, though.
Yeah, well, you might have been, but, you know, old Todd from New Heath might have felt differently.
Todd from New Heath?
Yeah, he might not have liked that scene as much as you. You know, I just don't think the audience will appreciate you saying us all, putting them in broad bracket.
Fair enough, but I thought it was a very engaging
scene. No, it was good.
I love the way
it looked
shot
great,
as well. It was one of the parts that really felt like it was a film as opposed to a TV show.
Yeah.
It was really quite... quite good, that bit. Then we get another flashback where Todd and Jesse are burying the body, or it's part of all the same flashback.
No, it's all because you get him and he's just desperate, he's upset.
But I wanted to talk about this part in the flashback where Todd tells Jesse to get some cigarettes out of the glove box, and he sees a gun in there. Mm. And Jesse comes over and points a gun at Todd.
No, he just holds a gun.
Yeah, he's just
like
holding the gun.
And
yeah.
He's clearly thinking about it, but he doesn't get that far.
He's getting a bit of that, what's it called, where you fall in love with your captures?
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. So
that's
got,
what we have
he's
with
got
Jack,
a bit of
because we've been in his
syndrome.
Basement for ages.
Because Todd is like, Jesse, give me the gun. Because after this, I was going to get you some pizza.
Come get some pizza, bro.
Do you like pizza?
Yeah.
Because you did a good job. You earned that pizza. And Jesse buckles, gives him the gun because he can't deal with it.
Gets cold feet.
And that scene is later mirrored later on.
Immediately after.
It's not even subtle. Yeah. When Jesse finally finds the money in the lining of the fridge.
Ooh,
that's where me and Sam keep our cash as well, which
don't
we thought coincidental.
Don't tell them.
It's all right. We have no money at the moment. So
yeah,
no
so there's nothing in the lining of our fridge.
But when
fridge,
we do have cash, that's where it is.
Yeah, we're going to put it in the lining of our fridge. And just as he finds it, these two FBI guys turn up and they start to search the room as well. And those scenes got really loads of tension. I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, are they going to find Jesse? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I agree. The build up is good, but I don't think the payoff is as strong in a way.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, yeah, because the build up's really great and it all escalates to a point where one of the FBI guys, it looks under this mattress and Jesse pops out. He's like, surprise!
Yeah.
Well, not like that, but you know, sort of.
He says, I'm not a cop killer. He doesn't say...
I'm not a cop killer.
Yeah, he doesn't
you play
say
cool.
Surprise.
You play cool, man. And I won't have to kill you, man. Call in your friend. Call him in, man. Call him in, bro.
Does he say it like that?
No.
No, he does. He says it exactly like that.
Okay,
that
sure.
That's a really good impression,
man. Thank you. So then there's this like Mexican standoff kind of thing. The cops overpower him by telling him that they've got
backup. They get him to buckle like he did in the flashback
like
that we
just
seen.
Like in the flashback.
He just goes, oh, I'll put my gun down then. I surrender. Take me in.
Take me in. I'm sorry. For this time, because it's the second time in a row, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, Jesse.
You idiot.
I thought you'd learn
from
that.
And then plot twist, they're not cops.
They are more Nazis pretending to be cops, and they are also looking
for the
money.
Are they Nazis, or are they just dudes who worked for the Nazis?
Yeah, I don't know.
So one of those.
But if they work for Nazis, it makes them sort of bad.
They're Nazi affiliates.
You know, one of them actually helped, which we find out in a later flashback.
Build the cage.
One of them helped, build Jesse's like shackles.
They didn't even look like the same guy, though.
Yeah,
I was like, is that the same guy? It didn't look like it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was the same guy.
And then they get Jesse.
So they've got some guilt, you know. They're bad people.
Yeah, they're
they are bad, bad people.
They're bad.
Anyway, there's a whole thing that happens. It's all really boring. There's a thing with a neighbor and
they're constantly doing this thing with a neighbor, trying to build up tension, but then Jesse like kills over. They tie him up and then Jesse's like, oh, I know where the money is. So they have to untie him. He shows them where the cash is. He starts taking the cash and then Jesse's like, I'm taking it. He's like, what do you think you're doing taking that? Points the gun at him.
Yeah.
And then Jesse's like, you're not going to shoot me. People will hear and then you'll get fucked.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, all right, take a third. So it's like all that tension build up, everything that had been building up to that moment in a way, and like it does just get resolved through conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And also the fact that these guys come in right when he finds the money is also a little bit like,
yeah. Yeah, it's fine, but it is just like playing on these things. And it's like
they could have had a little moment where like someone sees that there's movement happening when Jesse's searching, and then
what I think I find maybe a little bit frustrating about the film is that like Jesse, as the film progresses, doesn't really seem to like learn anything. He overcomes his goals that he needs to, but he doesn't seem to progress as a character. And I think that example is really good because you see that flashback of him buckling under the gun, and it's an opportunity to show character development of him going, maybe, yeah. Or doing something else, but finding a way of pressing forward. And I guess he does that by taking the money, but he just talks his way out of it and just gets a third of the cash.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like it's a victory for him as a person.
He's just spent ages trying to look for it. It's a bit of a, like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Jesse immediately goes to a vacuum cleaner shop because earlier on in Breaking Bad, this is one of the things, if you hadn't seen Breaking Bad, you'd probably be confused about. This vacuum cleaner guy has previously given Walt a brand new identity. He's someone who takes you far away, gives you a brand new identity, you basically disappear. And for this service, he charges a certain amount of money. This scene,
125k.
Yeah, this scene is quite funny. I quite like. It's like sort of an old. Again, it's the scene where Jesse has the most amount of character.
Yeah.
But essentially, what it all boils down to is Jesse's $1,800 short, and he can't afford to pay for the service, so he has to go and get more money, even though he's got a fully functioning car like that he could have sold.
Yeah.
I don't know why he didn't just like offer to throw in the car. It's not like he needs the car because he gets a new one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, maybe it wasn't worth 1,800.
Maybe not, but it would have been worth at least
something. He would need less.
I'd have paid a grand for it.
So then Jesse's in a kerfuffle. We do get a flashback to him and Walter White at some point.
Yeah,
does that happen after this?
No, that's later.
Even later.
That's later. That's way later.
My bad.
So what happens is Jesse then calls his mum.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets her to go away so that he can break into the house and he can steal some guns so he can go back to those Nazis who were pretending to be FBI guys and try and get the money back off them.
Yeah.
So then it's the climax of the film, essentially, is this scene in the welding company where he comes in and he's just basically asked them for $1,800.
So... yeah, again, so yeah, he goes in and he asks him for $1,800. The guy's been doing coke and he's all off on his nut. He's like, yeah, okay, I'll give, you know, we have some build up to it. Jesse's like, oh, I just need $1,800. If you give that to me, I'll be out of your hair. And this guy's coked up and he's like, the other guy's like, don't give him another cent. Don't do it. Don't do it. And he's like, no, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to kiss you. I'm going to make out with you.
Yeah,
you keep
he gets really close up to him. And he goes to Jesse, like, let's have a shootout to decide who gets.
Like the Wild West.
Like the Wild West. And the scene itself is cool.
Yeah. I totally love it.
The content of it is great. I like the way it's shot, and I like the concept as well, like just putting a modern day shootout in a film and doing it like that is cool, and the way Jesse wins it is cool. The problem I have with it,
yeah, he's got two guns.
Yeah,
one's in his pocket, one's in his front, but they don't know he's got the second gun in his pocket.
And he just
pocket,
like does a surprise.
So he shoots him through his pocket.
Reminds me of the Sister Brothers book
Oh, there's a movie of that.
Oh yeah, we should check that out. But the Sister Brothers book where they pretend to count down and then they just shoot before they count down. It's so funny. And that's cool. The whole sequence is great. But the problem that I have with it is like this is the final film. This is an event sold to us by Netflix. This is like a big moment. This should be huge. And really, we've had like two scenes with these guys. And I don't really like... it doesn't feel like... And it feels practical for Jesse to do this. It doesn't feel like there's anything to do with him on a personal basis. Yeah. These villains don't have a lot of status to them.
Yeah.
They're kind of pathetic from the get-go anyway.
Yeah,
they're kind of fumbly from the beginning. You know Jesse's going to win. Like, you don't really question that tension at all.
Yeah.
And so, like, actually, like, it, as the final pivotal moment, you know, the final sequence in Breaking Bad as well, there doesn't seem to be any poetry at play there.
Yeah, exactly.
There doesn't seem to be any narrative, like, a narrative pathos to it. There's nothing that Jesse's overcoming on an emotional basis. He's just trying to fuck off. He's trying to get out. And this is the last hurdle that he needs to get over.
Yeah.
And to him, you know, he kills these guys. And he's killed people before. You know, it's not a challenge for him.
The last thing he's just sort of got to do, but he's... You're right. And also with Jesse's character, I mean, it's not really necessarily like... I mean, it's not like necessarily
you know, because
like
Jesse,
a thing that Jesse...
The final moment for Jesse that he had to overcome, you know, in terms of narrative poetry, was him killing Todd or the death of Todd.
Yeah.
That's his last
that
poetic...
That felt a bit stronger,
that's
yeah.
his last piece of poetic justice, really. This guy is just a schmuck who's in his way.
Yeah.
So it's like the fact that that's what the main conflict of the entire film culminates to, it's just not very like... It looks great. The scenes are shot well. The way they're orchestrated as well, even the way they're written, it, you know, the way those scenes culminate through writing writing is well done, but it's about like what they mean with it for Jesse's character and what they mean in the broader narrative. And in the broader narrative of Breaking Bad, I don't think it really means much.
No,
right?
It doesn't. It means diddly squat, in fact. No, and then Jesse blows up the welding base just because that's where he was held. Torture.
Yeah.
And there's a big explosion, which they could have used that money to get a personal trainer. We need an explosion. This is a movie, kid. This is a movie. And then there's a flashback to Walter White. Bryan Cranston is back as Walter White.
And he's always great.
And it's like a season one. I think it's season one. They've got the van. Era.
Yeah. They've got
he's got a mustache. He's bald. And they've got the RV. But Jesse looks about 30. And they're talking about high school. And it's a bit. Bryan Cranston is amazing at coming back into that role.
He performs it really well.
He performs it so well.
It's a shame that the scene itself is kind of meandery and pointless,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, I know. It's just another
It's actually
scene.
The worst of all the flashback just, scenes as well,
in my
opinion.
It's just a scene to... Well, I disagree with that. There's one worse one.
All right,
that's
well,
late.
Yeah.
That's the last
you one. I might agree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I like the scene because I like season one Breaking Bad. But
yeah, but actually the content of the scene
but
is
if that
just
scene
like
was
around...
in season one Breaking Bad, you'd be like, cool, I didn't need this.
It doesn't contribute nearly anything. I mean, I guess it's implied that, because he goes, oh, what are you going to do, Jesse? You should go to college. You should study business at college. And I think it's slightly implied that he's going to take that advice.
Yes.
Which is kind
just
of
like
cute.
Just like he took Mike's advice
which
to
is
go
kind
to Alaska.
Of, yeah, which is kind of cute. But like that's it. But that's kind of my issue with these flashbacks as well. Is it is like it is just going. They're just shoving in motivation for Jesse, known characters to give Jesse motivation.
Yeah.
And the motivations are kind of very like his based around his actions as well. Mm. We don't even see moments where they're impactful to him on a personal basis. It's like just conversations he's had with people going like, "What would you do if this?" And they're like. I do this, or have you tried this, Jesse? So it's not even like really interesting
I'm
moments.
I'm gonna store all my money in the house.
So it's really like
I would go to Alaska.
Yeah,
I would study business.
So it's just like shoving in little things, but none of it's like. No, there's like really important moments for Jesse. It's just like these are the things that lead Jesse to making this decision now. Like,
yeah, but so I mean, I'm not. Like, it's not an unwelcome scene because I don't mind it. It's just a bit pointless. But it's not. It doesn't slow the film down.
No.
To me, anyway. I'm not angry that it's there. I'm just like, it doesn't need to be. There.
And you always just know in the back of your heart, like in the back of your heart.
In the back of my heart, Walter White sitting there going, Jesse, we need to cook.
We need to cook more meth. you know, in the back of in the back of your head, like you do know that none of this really needed to be made.
No, yeah, exactly.
You didn't need to tell this.
Vince Gilligan's ego stroking.
Yeah, we didn't need to see how Jesse got to Alaska.
Anyway,
sorry.
Let's just finish it and then we can wind up because there's only one scene left now. Jesse arrives in Alaska. He drives away. We get one last flashback with Jane.
Well, he sends a letter to the boy whose mother...
He sends a letter to Brock, but we don't see what the letter says.
Yeah.
Then there's a flashback with Jane.
Oh, yeah.
And Jane talks about her philosophy of just going with things.
And how it's bad.
And
you need to carve out your own life. And that's what Jesse's doing.
Ends with a flashback from Jane, and then that is the end.
And then Jesse's in Alaska.
And we're watching it. You watched it, Jake. We watched it with our friend Jake. And both of you went, oh.
Yeah. Well, because the most interesting point of that, the most interesting thing to explore within this entire thing is Jesse in Alaska, like doing something else, like adapting to a new environment. Like Jesse's journey to Alaska, like that journey, it didn't even seem to change him as a person. He just got the cash together and fucked off. Like,
what's funny as well is that my brother phoned me and he was like, how come he knows shit? But then he also was like, oh, my friend fell asleep watching it. And then I spoke to my friend and he said he fell asleep watching it as well. And when we watched it, Jake fell asleep watching it. Have anyone seen it? Did any of their friends fall asleep watching to it? Is this a common problem?
Are we all falling asleep to El Camino? Is it all sending us to sleep? Or is this just our mates who all may have ADHD, we don't know.
Yeah, or may have a severe sleep deprivation.
Sleep deprivation from staying up all night.
I think overall, Vince Gilligan made Breaking Bad, big highlight of his career. He deserves all the praise he got for that.
Yeah.
And then immediately after, he does Better Call Saul. And now after that, he's done a Breaking Bad movie. Guy, time to move on. Make something else.
Do something new.
Do something new, because the guy's clearly skilled in places.
The thing is that, again, I don't think El Camino is bad, really. It's just okay. It's just fine.
It's pointless.
It's pointless, but there are some really great scenes in it. There's some great moments in it. Like we said, we've illustrated how we've enjoyed how scenes are put together.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't leave an impact. It's not really like saying much. It's just it's illustrating as opposed to.
Did it make you want to go back to Breaking Bad?
Not particularly. To be honest, it didn't make me that curious. I get a little bit. I probably will revisit. Yeah.
So
I just went from no to yeah.
No way.
I'm thinking about it. I don't know until whether or not I'll watch it yet. I don't know when I will, so it will take...
It made me want to go back.
Rewatching Breaking Bad will take like a bit of work for me, because it's like six seasons, and like finding the time for that is a whole other thing. Yeah, it made me a bit curious. For the later seasons, I think.
I think all the flashbacks as well is kind of... They're fun, but also a little bit unnecessary because the Breaking Bad show never flashbacks, ever. They just move it along, you know, all in one continuity. And I think if this film was constructed as it's just Jesse's film and we're just seeing Jesse move and his stuff, and they didn't focus on these flashbacks, I think it probably would have been a bit stronger, because it would have forced them to make those present day scenes
I think it would have forced them to excavate where he's at there in the moment more and try and understand what he wants to do. You know, they'd have to fill more things in. That means Jesse has to have more interactions with people. It means you should end up excavating who his character is in the present. Instead, you have lots of scenes which are flashbacking to us so we know what Jesse wants to do.
Yeah.
Which is go to Alaska and take a business degree and now live in and now carve out his own place in the world as opposed to follow the universe. Which I'm like, good for him. But like, if they release like another film which is like Jesse in Alaska, like building
that.
A business, I'd probably be more interested in that.
You'd make more meth.
Make more meth.
Just don't learn anything.
That would be lit. Yeah.
So that was El Camino. That was an interesting way of reviewing it on here. I quite liked it, doing it scene by scene. Let us know what you think of El Camino. And also, we're going to check out those Vince Gilligan movies because they piqued my interest. So we'll be talking about those next week. If you want to watch them too, so you're up to date with us.
Maybe you've got some opinions you want to share on them.
The films are called... Home Fries and Wilder Napalm, and let's watch Hancock as well.
Yeah, right? I love Hancock. and let us know what you thought of El Camino. Email in, comment, whatever.
And remember the competition,
and
haiku.
Send us some haikus.
One.
Tweet them at us. Message them to
Instagram,
us.
Instagram,
we can't wait.
Email at nitpicks, inquiries@nitpicks.co.uk.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.
That was fun. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.